Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail. Hey, everybody, welcome. It's so great to have all of you tune us in and turn us on. Thank you so much. I've got a really just thrilled to be talking with someone that I've known for a while. His work is beyond, Dr. Carl Greer. I mean, it is so beyond the beyond. And, you know, I was talking earlier, Benny, about Stan Lee. And, you know, there are people that show up in life and you know that they are called. They are called to create so much that so that the rest of us can step out so much that so the rest of us can stand on the shoulders of their shoulders. And that's Dr. Carl Greer, you know, a businessman, a philanthropist, retired Jungian analyst. Boy, we could talk about Carl Jung like a lot. Clinical psychologist. And in this book, this memoir, he talks about his early life, post-war, Midwestern, middle class. But, you know, his upbringing so parallels so many of ours. And we're going to talk about that today. You know, what is it about childhood tragedies? What is it that teaches us to live life in such a different way? You know, how much pain do you have to experience in order to learn certain things that will help us look at our emotions? But then for some of us, take it in a totally other direction and totally forget about how to manage our emotions. And so here we are today talking with someone. Success is an understatement. You know, a successful businessman, president of an independent oil and gas company. But what happens at that midlife point? You know, what happens when those of us that don't necessarily get nudged gently by spirit? What happens at that point in life? And by the way, I think midlife is being redefined as we speak. But what happened with him when he recognized that his spiritual self was crying out for so much more? Today, we get to chat with Dr. Carl Greer about that and much more. You know, as somebody that gives back to the world, he has certainly rewritten the script on what it means to pay it forward. But more importantly, he's trained with Peruvian shamans. He's trained with Alberto about healing the light body school. He has done so much to set the rest up for those of us that come after him to stand on some very, very powerful deltoids. Dr. Carl, great to have you. Welcome to the show.
Dr. Pat, thank you very much for those kind words. I'm glad to be here today.
I want to start with the conversation about standing on the shoulders of all that has come before. I want to start that, especially if we're going to talk about the necktie and the jaguar. Certainly, I love this. I love the title of it. But I want to talk about that. You know, I remember going back a number of years and having a conversation with Gloria Steinem and talking with her to reflect on her life and what she's done for the women's movement. And her comment stayed with me for a long time. And she says, we all stand on the shoulders of those that have come before. Certainly, that's what we're doing with your work. I want to ask you, when you think about the shoulders of those that have come before you, that you've had the opportunity to stand on, can you think of those that helped shape the Dr. Carl Greer I'm talking to today?
You only know who you know in your life, and I would say that my parents, even though I had different relationships with each of them and with my mother, not for too long, I certainly, she was part of who I am. And in some ways, my maternal grandmother was somebody who was very important to me. And then I've had teachers that have made an impression on me. Then in the field of psychology, people with whom I worked as a an LSN when I was in training, and also people with whom I worked, you know, people that I was seeing as a psychologist. I mean, they had surprising influences on me. And then as I got more involved in charities and philanthropies, the causes and the people with whom I've worked really touched me, and they've influenced me. So I've been fortunate in meeting and being able to relate to a lot of people who have made a big impression on me in a continuing way.
You know, thank you so much for talking about that, because I really do believe that there's so much we can learn from each other. There's so much in the collective that we can learn. But there are so many things that are at the subconscious level, of course, as well. You know, I was reading your book, and I was touched by your grandfather, if I could start there. Because you and I, you know, our grandfathers have had an enormous influence. You know, and I never thought that Grandpa Balella would have that influence in me. In your case, taught you woodworking. You know, he showed you his workshop and tools and explained how to use them. And, you know, I'm thinking about that event and how powerful it is. My grandfather, who I later found out was actually born in Brazil, taught me about painting, oil painting. I can remember the smell of kerosene from his little shack, believe it or not, in the Bronx, right? The dude bought property in the Bronx to sell used tires, and he used most of it to grow vegetables and a little shack for oil painting. I want to ask you, those memories of the early years in your life, you know, what kind of feeling did they spark, you know, to help you later on in life when you sort of had that midlife epiphany?
Well, it's interesting you talk about scents that you remember, you know, the smell of oil. I mean, I remember in terms of woodworking, you know, with wood burning, you know, where you put initials and stuff on things.
Yeah.
I can remember that smell. And I can remember the smell of my grandmother's cooking. Again, on my both of my grandmothers were good cooks. The one on my mom's side was a baker. And I can remember the comforting smells of cookies and pies. And in back then, you know, you had a lot of meat and potatoes and gravy and, and those things cooking. So I remember those things. And in terms of another big influence of with my granddad on my mom's side, he taught me to fish. And we spent a fair amount of time in boats around the shore just fishing and not sometimes saying a word, but that was very, very formative and important to me. That's been with me ever since. And, you know, my kids have learned to fish, as have my grandchildren. And so that's kind of passing it down through the ages.
You know, as I think about the book, and I was really thinking to myself, I was putting myself in your shoes for a moment, albeit not so easy to do, just sand after all. I mean, just not so easy to do. But I was attempting to do that and just think about this beautifully fulfilling and enriched life, right? And I was reading so much about this, including martial arts and so many things that cultivated and sculpt who you are. And you know, the reason I bring this up is, you know, I have this picture of Jung, Carl Jung. Some people don't say Jung. I don't know why I say Jung. I have this picture of him sculpting, You know, he was a sculptor. And I have this picture of him sculpting, and I could never get it out of my mind. You know, this man just standing down sculpting. I wanted to know, when you sat down and write this book, how did writing this book change you? How did the reflection on all of these points in time in your life, how was the journey in writing this book transformative for you?
Well, it was. It happened over a lot of years. I started to, I wrote a couple other self-help books, which I didn't have a lot of my own story in those. And I had some people in my life, family, some friends, who were curious about me. So I started off thinking, well, maybe I'll write a book mostly for my kids and grandkids. And in that process, it allowed me to think about key things in my life that I hadn't thought of for a long time that were poignant. And as I reflected on them and I started to put them all together, I got a little different sense of my story than I would have, Dr. Pat, had I not done it.
Yeah.
So people talk about the power of a recapitulation of your life.
Yeah.
And it did that for me. You know, I was, there was obviously, you pick and choose what you put into a memoir, and but just that process of thinking about important things, not to say some of the things that aren't in there weren't important, but it just was helpful to me, not only to put some of my past at rest or peace, but also in the time I have left. I think it's given me a little foundation in a funny way to go forward differently than I would have had I not written the book. I mean, it's kind of helped me prioritize what's important to me more than I would have had I not written it.
You know, I'm going to skip this break because I want to continue to talk about this. I have an interesting question for you. If Carl Jung were here now, you and I both have a relationship with Carl Jung, Dr. Jung. If Carl was here now, Dr. Jung were here now, what might he say about the archetypes of the necktie and the jaguar?
he was a very deep guy, so it might not have been the surface thing, but it might have. I mean, you know, neckties are constricting, and
right.
Jaguars, unless you have a little sense of the Inca mythology, you might not know all the meanings that come to somebody was talking about a jaguar, but Jung was interesting in the interplay between the conscious world and the unconscious world. And I think he could have played with the idea of the necktie was kind of the everyday world, and the jaguar was more the interior world, and how they interact with each other can be, in some sense, all important. Because if the interior world and the exterior world aren't in balance, a person can have issues in their everyday life.
Boy, I'm telling you, isn't that the truth? You know, I want to ask you this question, Dr. Greer. One of the things that I found so interesting about the book as I was reading it, it was just, I was captivated by the way you were telling the story in the book. Everything from karate to neckties, but I was really interested in the karate competition people that showed up with tattoos. That's we'll save that for another show, maybe. But that got my attention. But this is a time we're living in right now, and the timing of your book couldn't have been better, because this is a book that really calls us to reflect. But more importantly, I think we're all looking at what is the new narrative of our lives. Can you talk for a minute about the book in itself and the book's journey to discuss and maybe encourage meaningfulness and fulfillment in our lives, as you did. And, you know, more importantly, to change our stories and to change our lives. I mean, this I find so fascinating, because if people read the book, or when they read the book, they're going to see the multiple levels of personal change you made from the inside, the outside, and all of the sides. But talk about this journey, this book, helping us understand life, meaning, fulfillment, and how to change our stories.
Yeah, I, in addition to writing it just to kind of make myself find more peace and to share my story with family and friends, I started to think that a lot of the themes that I encountered were themes that other people might encounter in their own lives. So I thought, you know, I'll pose some questions at the end of each chapter that a reader could choose or not choose to reflect on. But if they chose to, it might just allow them to spend time, like I did, reflecting on important juncture points in their lives, themes of leadership, you know, being followers versus leaders, competitiveness versus not, growing up in really emotionally distraught upbringings, having childhood trauma, having a perfect, in your mind, upbringing, and yet having problems in everyday life. You know, all the all the universal questions, you know, do I like my job? What if I do if I don't? Am I happy in my relationships? What's my relationship to my children, to my parents, to my loved ones, to my friends? You know, it's just all the life issues that I was confronting. I thought, well, you know, maybe some readers may want to reflect on those things themselves with the questions that I pose as a springboard for reflection. So that was one of the things that I was hoping that could happen for some readers. And for me, you know, I had had a pretty scripted life. You know, I grew up in the Midwest. You know, my parents came from relatively humble backgrounds, and my dad had a job with U.S. Steel, and we were in the steel industry. And I, based on my childhood friends and my parents' friends, thought, you know, if I graduated college, got a job in a factory or a mill, and had it for 45 years, and could support a wife and family, and take some vacations, go to church on Sunday, you know, maybe play sports, you know, that would be a good life. And in many ways, it is a good life. But there was part of me that was wanting something else, and I was fortunate that I was able to give voice to that something else and help over many years actualize it. And so I shared that process in the book as well.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that because, you know, I think a lot of people are going through this right now. I'm starting to look at a number of my colleagues who are doing surveys and studies and, you know, talking with people that did not go back to their jobs, right? I mean, it's an interesting statistic. People did not go back to their jobs. It's like they had what I went through, you know, in my transition, sort of my awakening. And, you know, what you talked about, there's a part in the book, I want to just get to it real quick, because I think this really hits a lot of people. There's a part in the book, you know, where you, I think it's in the working with all the moving parts part of the book. And it says, my internal drive to get things done according to my schedule sometimes kept me from spending as much time with people as I should have. For example, engaging in collaborative thinking about how they could accomplish a goal, right? But then you say something interesting. On the other hand, I was also aware that it was appropriate to have limits to each interaction if I was going to manage effectively. Wow. I could take those two sentences out of a lecture I sat in with Peter Drucker. I went to Claremont. And we were allowed to sit in the Peter Drucker classes, although all of the psychology people really weren't allowed to talk, right? We just, you could come in and you could sit in the back, but 3 hours, the man never moved. But I love that. This was an art to learn about how to manage people, give people enough time, but not be intrusive in productivity. And I started to look at that and I thought to myself, wow, there's that part of who we become based on childhoods that are not so great, where we, I think we learned that skill from having a traumatic childhood. I don't know. What do you think?
Yes, I think I laid the emotional groundwork for it. But one of the teachings for myself was it's not always this or that, or all of this or all of that. Just like in looking back, I wish I would have been more patient, better listener. But at the time, being a boss, it served me to try to get things done. And so I didn't dance that dance as well then as I might have who I am now. But, you know, you kind of, but I didn't have that awareness. I was kind of driven by a different drummer at that time. And so I think we're fortunate if we can take time to reflect, Dr. Pat, and make those course adjustments as we go along. I think it's a question of to do that. You have to have intent to do it, and kind of an act of grace with the higher power, however you think about that.
Yep. I don't know what it is about age 41, but I want to talk about, you know, parts of the book where you beautifully describe not only what your journey is, but they're really takeaways from every chapter, from everything you put in here. Everything from right tactics and right timing, but especially patience. And I want to talk with you about patience for a minute, because I think that learning patience, let me just put it differently. Given where we sit today, you know, had things not changed here in the past couple of months, people's patience were wearing thinner than thin. And, you know, I want to ask you, is patience a spiritual journey?
I think so. I mean, like all, you can, it's how you perceive it, you know, who's doing the looking. And you can... three different people can look at the same set of facts and it would have different meaning to them. I'm in the context of your question with you right now, seeing patience to me has slowed me down, allowed me to be aware of other things than, you know, kind of the monkey chatter in my head, and therefore get in touch with other parts of myself and maybe other parts of life that I wouldn't have had I not been patient. So in that sense, it's very spiritual. And it's a practice. I mean, how do you slow down when you're kind of programmed, as I was and still am in some ways, to keep doing a lot of stuff? And but I'm better at it than I was. And it has been, it's taken time and effort to do so. So yeah, I believe, and I'm affirming what you said, I think it is a spiritual practice.
You know, this book is, first of all, I just love to read the step-by-step, you know, pathway you've taken. I want to take a short break because when we come back, I want to talk about what happens in our 40s. Now, you and I happen to have 41 as like a thing, like 41. Yeah. Maybe it happened before 41. But there was something about 41, not 40, not 39, not 43, 41. When we come back, I want to talk with you about those pivotal moments, the moments where you realized, or maybe it wasn't like a moment, but you had like an awakening. There was something about your uber successful life right? Something about everything that was happening that just seemed like it might not fit anymore. I describe mine as walking out of the house one day, out of a very big house I owned, an executive thing with a big car garage and the whole deal, dressed in my little AT&T suit with the bow ties. Can you see me there? And walking out of the house, right, with heels on, getting ready to leave, and took one last look in the mirror, as I always did. And I had a moment where I was unrecognizable to myself. We're going to take a short break when we come back. For those of you out there, The Necktie and the Jaguar, a memoir to help you change your story and find fulfillment. Dr. Carl Greer. The way of the warrior. What does that look like? And how does each of us get to that place and end up on a pathway that may look so different than everything else that came before? I can't wait to hear what happened to Dr. Carl Greer. We'll be right back, everybody. Stay tuned.
Even though your home base is one Enneagram type, you have characteristics of all the types. Tune in to Enneagram Conversations with Renee Siegel, the second and fourth Monday of each month at 4 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Learn how you can unlock your unlimited potential. Visit YouArePurePotential.com for more about Renee and her work. That's the letter U, the letter R, PurePotential.com.
Hey there, I'm Ricky Schwartz from My Turn Life Coaching, Reclaim Your Life. How do you know if you're living your life and not someone else's? Here's one way to find out. First, list out your top five core values. For example, mine are empathy, excellence, passion, service, and core values. Then put those core values into short first-person core value statements. In my case, one, empathy powers my relationships. Two, excellence is the goal in all things I do. Three, passion fuels my perseverance. Four, my value is measured by my service to others. And five, core values drive all of my life decisions. Now ask yourself, am I using my core value statements to drive my personal and professional decisions? Maybe not. Maybe you've never even considered doing so. And that's where life coaching begins. Go to myturnlifecoaching.com and let's put your personal core values into your driver's seat.
Caring for someone with a life-altering diagnosis? You are a care hero. Navigating the unfamiliar options can be overwhelming, but you are not alone. Tune in to A Cup of Comfort with me, Trish Lau, twice monthly on Transformation Talk Radio. Let me guide you through your care hero journey by providing actionable information on how to care for a loved one in need. For more information about me, visit trishlaub.com. That's Trish Laub, L-A-U-B as in boy, .com.
Learn how to lead a happier life on Miles to Go with Brittany Miles. How to lose to gain it all. Join Brittany every second and fourth Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Listen as coach and healer Brittany Miles shares stories that teach you about surrender. For more information about Brittany, MilesToGoCoaching.com.
Are you ready to shift your life into overdrive and stop wasting your time? If so, then I want to invite you right now to the Body Regeneration Online Academy with me, Tracy L. In a world filled with so much information, you can get overloaded and confused, left feeling like you've tried everything and still no results. If this is you, then this platform is for you to help you step into your power, your intuition, and gain clarity. You will learn simple tools that you can use as you walk down the street, and I will teach you how to grow a stronger connection to the God consciousness. Imagine having me as your coach, shifting you, uplifting you, empowering you every week, and most of all, helping you stay connected so you can navigate your life's journey with ease and grace. Nothing will be able to get in your way. Plus, you will have a community filled with souls just like you to pick you up when you fall down and support you on your wins. No one can go this journey alone. If you are ready for your live activations, check me out at TracyLClark.com and join the TLC Body Regeneration Online Academy now.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. Hey, look, if you want to find out more about Dr. Carl Greer, please check it out. Go over to his fantastic website. And it's simple, Carl Greer, GREER.com. And you can sign up for announcements. And that's where you also will be able to find the book. The book is available pretty much, you know, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, independent stores, I believe. But this is the deal. Also, this next part of our conversation is about changing the story. It's about changing the story. It's about giving back. It's about understanding about those moments in our lives, you know, where something happens. Something happens. You know, he and I come from this interesting background, but also, I mean, how do you go from that person to then go to Columbia University, to then go and study with shamans? How do you do that? Well, if you go take a look at Carl's work, and I mean seriously take a look at it, you know, there are so many books, his blogs, he's rewritten the story on giving back, I just want to say. But this is where we can all take a look at our lives right now. The Necktie and the Jaguar, the book that I've got in front of me, The Necktie and the Jaguar, is all about that. It's about the pivotal moments of our lives that show up if we could recognize them and then do something about it. Dr. Greer, thank you so much for this, and thank you for the book. Look, before the break and during the break, I was kind of telling you, like, I swear, when I talk about that moment and walking down, I could tell you, I could describe that foyer area, like it was yesterday. And it wasn't yesterday. Age 41, something about it, looking in the mirror. What was it for you? And the reason I ask you is, I don't think it was like that moment that everything happened. I just think that was the moment that the universe spirit got my attention. I think it was building. How was it like for you? And I'm also curious about your return to Okinawa karate, and you know how that might have fueled some things. Was it like that for you? Did an alien take over your body? just asking.
You said your return to. I didn't hear what you said. Your return to what?
What I'm asking is, what was that point for you? Was it when you decided to go back and take Okinawa karate again? Was it that? Or did something happen before that where you were just like, oopsie, this doesn't feel good?
It might be I was kind of a slow reactor to life because when I graduated high school, I was interested in, you know, liberal arts. You know, I like to read fiction books and daydream a little bit. And I really felt that that would not serve me well. I needed to kind of, the word I used to myself back then was burn those tendencies out. And so I went to school in engineering, which was as far away from that as you can imagine. And but I had, even then, kind of an interest, Dr. Pat, in psychology. So I thought about, you know, maybe switching my major in college in my senior year, decided that would be the height of unpracticalness. So I put that at bay for many, many years. Went to graduate school, got a degree in business. I taught at Columbia in business and then became a businessman for many years. But I still had this part of me that thought, you know, maybe I'd like to give vent to the spiritual side of me, maybe study about psychology. I thought that would be a means to that end. And just didn't think it was practical. I thought it was kind of a dumb idea, and I kept telling myself that until it just kind of became more and more powerful in me to try it. And in my early 40s, I decided, well, I'm going to, you know, consider going back while I'm still working and getting a degree, you know, part-time in psychology and just see where that would lead me. And ultimately, I wanted to be a Jungian analyst, not knowing much more about Carl Jung other than that he was in myths and stories and fairy tales, which I used to like to read and we were talking earlier about Marvel comic books. I used to read the those as a kid. So I like stories, and I associate that with Jung, not realizing that there's a lot of things you have to do to become a Jungian analyst, not the least of which is have some training in psychology and be analyzed yourself. So all these things came to a head in my early 40s, and I ended up deciding to go back to school in psychology and continuing work in my day job, which I've done ever since then. But I've just had the opportunity, fortunately, I've had enough resources that I accumulated to allow me to pursue all these other interests. And I realize a lot of people don't have that luxury. You know, you give up one path unless you really plan for it. You know, it's a big risk. And so when I'm talking to people about that, I'm saying, you know, experiment, try change at the margin. And and that surprisingly can allow people to ultimately make big changes. But for me, it was a process of it finally became the time, and it wasn't like a dramatic moment. I just kind of felt this yearning inside myself. I said, it's time to do this. And that's how it worked for me.
You know, I love to be able to read a book like this. And I think what we're talking about is what's encouraging so many people. You and I, too. I mean, my childhood, how do I say this? You know, what was it about comic books for us that in our childhood, what was it about our childhood where we found relief out of comic books? And I could tell you, not only did I buy pretty much every comic book on the planet, but I used to redraw the characters. You know, very unfeminine, by the way, because comic books were not really seen as, unless you were getting the Veronica one, you know,
Wonder Woman.
That's right. Boy, I'll tell you, that saved my life more times than not. But there was something about this and something about the archetypes of them that, you know, helped, I think, for me as well, guide me, you know. But taking that next action to then fully step into the world, to fully say, yes, I am going to do this. I'm going to make that change, right? I'm going to reintegrate. I'm going to do that. Those are the pivotal moments. And it sounds like that was a pivotal time for you, too.
It was. It kind of set the stage for things that have happened over the years. Now that I'm 81 years old, they're still happening. So, you're right. These influences, we both know stuff about archetypes, and archetypes are energies that influence how we think, act, and feel. And, you know, they can be heroic, and they can be tragic, and they can be mean-spirited and all those things. But they're around us all the time, and it behooves us to try to have a conscious relationship to them, or they will, in their own way, influence us in ways that maybe isn't in our best interest.
I want to jump ahead because there's so many parts in this that I love. I love where there's this evolution of you to really teach, and I believe it was in a Christian organization, but teach multi, you know, let's just call it multiple faith beliefs or multiple beliefs of Buddhism and so forth. You know, this became an expression, it sounds like, for you as also on a way to discovery, right? And yeah. I want to ask you, you know, this beautiful integration. I have three friends, you know, a rabbi, Muslim, and, you know, Pastor Bob, and they created Interfaith Radio, and I was always fascinated by it. But this sounds like this was a pathway, a gateway for that next step, was it?
Yeah, I was, my son was in ninth grade, and it was a confirmation class in the church, and the pastor asked me if I would teach it, and with my sister-in-law, she and I taught this course. So we had some freedom as to what we would teach. And so obviously I wanted the Christian message to be, you know, the one we spent the most time on, but I wanted the kids to get an idea that there are other great religions. And so we visited mosques. We visited, Buddhist, Zen Buddhist places of worship, Hindu temples, Baha'i. We studied Judaism. So we had a chance to learn a lot about other religions. And I wanted the young people to get a sense of not all the doctrinal problems, but the commonalities and how each of them at core have the message that know yourself. You're part of a larger energy, God or spirit, however you think about it, and do good, give back, because all of them have at one level the ethos of giving back. So for me, early on, to be part of teaching that was important, and it was very meaningful to me to do that.
And you know, let's talk about what I call the leap. And maybe the leap is from the necktie to the jaguar. Maybe they're different. Maybe they're one and the same. But there's a leap. I mean, I felt a leap for myself. And I want to ask you about it. Because even though some of these dots get connected, like so naturally after a point, right, where we start to get a new level of awareness, Dr. Greer, and we get this new level of awareness, dots start to get connected automatically. I was sharing with you during a break. There's no way that the... absolutely no humanly possible way without an intervention from the universe that I was going to get from Livingston, New Jersey to Columbia in 45 minutes and be able to get up there and register. I mean, there's just some things that you just can't explain in that way. And let's talk about the leap, because some parts of our journeys don't feel like a leap when we're in them. But certainly when I read your book, it feels like a leap. Although you learn about vulnerability, you learn about collaboration instead of competition, and you talk about all these things in the book, but you call it discovering what had been hidden. Is that the first step? Is that what we need to really do before we can take the leap?
I think so. The first steps for me were when I decided to go back to school in psychology, and I had to go into analysis myself. So a lot of the way I thought I was and what was driving me, I found out that I had some unconscious things that I needed to address and come to grips with. So that was a big thing. And so for many years, being in analysis, becoming a psychologist, becoming a Jungian analyst, helped me to get more at peace with my inner life. But kind of the big move, I would say, when I was around 60, I really got seriously interested in shamanism. And I had some experiences in what I would call the transpersonal worlds in shamanism through journeys, some with plants and some without, that really changed even more my worldview and got me into the jaguar spiritual, meaningful, mythopoetic part of myself, more than the jaguar part. So It was kind of a culmination, Dr. Pat, of a lot of the things I'd done. And then for 20 years, shamanism has been an important spiritual part of my life. But so has Christianity, and so has Eastern philosophy, and so has martial arts. So it's all kind of fitting together in a way that works for me.
I want to ask you, I love that you've written this book, and I love that I'm hearing the time in your life that you are reading this book. I want to talk a little bit about how this book and how what you've written and the sharing of a powerful, powerful life's journey and story, how might we use some of the lessons you've had to help change the narrative for people in the world today?
I would say one big takeaway for me, and I could suggest for others, would be to really learn how to listen. And that means to news, with friends, with family. It's a great gift to give somebody to just listen, and not feel that you're just waiting your turn to talk and say what you have to say, and not feeling you have to help them and, you know, fix stuff for them. You just listen. It's a great gift. And I think if a person can do that, that's a good starting point. Because we have a world right now, it seems, Dr. Pat, that has, you know, a lot of divisiveness, and people aren't listening to each other, and they're sharing, in many cases, different sets of facts. So if you listen and you have some actual knowledge of your facts, you might have an opportunity in listening to those who may not share your views to somehow, without getting it too contentious, just share your facts. Mm-hmm. Say, well, this, and you know that, and so forth. Mm-hmm. And if nothing else, they feel heard.
Yeah.
Because right now, a lot of people just don't feel heard. And so that'd be one thing. The other thing that we talked about earlier, just to be patient. You know, some things just need to work out in their own time, in their own way. But the paradox there is, the other side of that is, sometimes you have to cut the cord. You know, you have to know when to let something die and move on to something else. So that's a question of discernment and to have another source of information about those decisions. That's when I talk about, you know, going to these transpersonal realms, and that involves having a relationship to your unconscious. And you can do that through, you know, meditation. You can do that through analysis. You can do that through your dreams. And you can do that through shamanic work and journey work. The other thing I would say that's been important for me and many friends that I have is spending time in nature. Really spend time in nature and see nature as an active being that's observing us just as we are observing her. And and sometimes just being still, just being, learning how to be there, we can get answers to some of the things that are working us or, you know, troubling us in ways that we don't even believe are possible, just by sitting in front of a lake and watching the water go by, or watching the clouds, or being around a bunch of pine trees. Those are things that I might suggest that people consider doing to make changes. You know, listen better, be patient, spend time in nature.
You know, the other part of this that I love is, there are two parts of this, Carl, that I just want to talk about. One, I'm really struck by one thing. And, you know, we've heard this over and over again. So many people whose names we know looked at their lives and jumped in the deep end of the pool. And, you know, it doesn't matter who you look at, whether you look at Georgia O'Keeffe or whether you look at Colonel Sanders. You know, there are people that just did not let time become the predictor of their fulfillment in life's pathway. And I'm really struck by the Jaguar's call, right? You know, and studying with Alberto as well. And certainly, you know, early on, he was one of the first people I interviewed way back, and was so struck by that work that it shifted my direction, not only of the show, but my own personal life. And yeah. I want to ask you, when the Jaguar calls, how do you answer?
Well, in this particular situation, and this is where you get into the kind of the mystical. Alberto and I, two of us, were doing some work together. He is a friend. I taught him in his school. And so we were doing some work together. And he had given me a stone to work with in which he had said, you know, there's an energy of a jaguar that a shaman many centuries earlier had put into the stone in a sacred place, maybe Machu Picchu. Mm. So you had the energy of the stone, the energy of the jaguar, and the energy of the shaman all kind of in this rock. And so that was and so as we're doing the work, the stone in my hand started to throb in the eyes of the object, and it started to move, literally. So I'm seeing this, he's seeing this, And so, you know, feed it, because energetically, when you get into these realms, these things can feed on you. And so I sprayed it with Florida water, and I felt then this, you know, that life is bigger than you can think, and there's realities of which we are a part that, you know, we don't even realize.
Right.
And so this connection to this thing other than me, and the things that got set in my energy body and that night and another many times to follow, I think in some ways kind of rewired me.
Yeah, that's
so,
it.
I'm different, and it's allowed me to be less constricted, which was the necktie, in ways that are hard to describe other than what I'm attempting to do now, and allowed me to be freed up to live differently than I otherwise would have, and allowed me to be less acquisitive and more wanting to give back, because as I've gotten to the end of my life, I really, I spent a lot of time acquiring things, but now I really am spending all my time, how can I get rid of them in meaningful ways in the time I have left? So it's interesting. And I think, Dr. Pat, the shaman work has been an impetus to all that in ways that I can't necessarily describe, you know, all the means ends to it, but it's certainly been, you come into this life with nothing and you leave with nothing in some ways other than your acquired experiences.
Yeah.
And so to try to make a difference with what you have in terms of my knowledge, my energy, and my money, and that's what I'm trying to do in the time I have left.
And I love that I ask you that question. I mean, first of all, Dr. Kruger, thank you for joining me here today. There's so much. I mean, I could go on and talk with you about it. But, you know, part of this is so important, these moments. I mean, I never thought in a million years that my boss sending me out in 1997 on a vision quest with the woman Sidonia Cahill so that I was supposed to steal her ideas. Never would have done it, by the way. But that thing did for me the way you're describing. And I can't describe it. When people ask me about it, I can't describe it. My very close friends, I've been able to read from that journal for those that really want to know. But that's the energy and the juice that I read in your book that really brings you forward in order to help us all create a better world. And I wanted to thank you so much for that. I want to thank you for writing the book to inspire us to do more in the way of creating a better world. And, you know, thank you for all of that. I would love to know, what's your personal message? What would you like to leave us with? And thank you again for bringing the story to the forefront.
Well, thank you for having me today. And again, those kind words. I think we all have a chance to write a new story, even if we have a few weeks to live. It's just how we can change our perspective about our world and our life and believe that we're part of a loving, bigger energy, that we came from that, we're going to go back to that, and have faith that that's the case. And being in nature has helped me be reminded of that. I mean, in the last couple of years, I've had open-heart surgery and, bypass surgery, and I've had treatments for prostate cancer and, lots of life things, which have made me much more aware of my mortality and how much time I have left. And right now I'm doing fine. But I think all of us have more power, even if we have a short time to live, to make that time differently than we think. And it's between us and spirit to kind of figure that out. And I think part of the ways for me that's worked, spending time in nature, working with my dreams, taking a little time, frankly, to just reflect and not and not get so busy that we don't have time to periodically take a look at our lives.
Yeah. No, I completely agree with you in that way. Thank you so much for everything you've done. Thank you. And again, I just want folks to know, Carl, that they can go to your website, carlgreer.com, and certainly they can get a copy of the book. And for those of you that missed any part of this, please watch it again or listen to it again later on today. The Necktie and the Jaguar, a memoir to help you change your story and find fulfillment, Dr. Carl Greer.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.